The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Well, there's good news from the Bank of England today, which has forecast a rapid recovery for the economy, and it's partly down to vaccines, James.
Yes, this is essentially the idea that as people are vaccinated and restrictions are eased, people really will be happy to go out and spend money because they won't be worried about getting the virus because they've had a vaccine. And I think this is, the Bank of England report reflects there is a broad belief that there is quite a lot of pent-up demand in the economy. And so that, and households have been saving considerably more than they normally do. And so when you ease these restrictions, people are going to go out and spend that money.
Katie, let's look at the vaccines in more detail. There's been a UK trial that started to look at the mixing of the COVID vaccines. How significant is that?
Well, I think it just shows how at the moment, the UK side is examining all the various things they can do to try and speed up the programme. And also, it does raise questions about supply. We have had assurances from the EU that the Pfizer supply will be strong. But I think the main reason they're looking at this is the question is, could it actually mean there was a stronger immune response? And I think that if you look at not yet validation, but one study this week on the Oxford vaccine saying that waiting, 12 weeks onwards is actually something that will increase the immune response, a decision that was initially criticised when they said they were going to do that. It does show you to a degree how trying new things, because science has moved so quickly in these vaccines, is at a point where I think that the interesting angle that they want to look at is whether you can boost the immunity, the efficacy these various things offer by changing a few factors. So obviously right now we don't know where exactly it's going to end up, but I think that if you think back a few weeks, there were briefly some horror headlines, I think initially in the New York Times, about this idea of mix and matching vaccines, and they were read almost as, a Frankenstein's monster style approach. This is not that. It is, I think, looking to see, is there a way of actually, using the current vaccines to be more effective, but two, clearly, if we have lots of coming at different times, what can you do with that?
Now, James, the vaccination minister, Nadeem Zahawi, has been talking about this today. He's also been talking about reaching the 10 million milestone of first doses of the vaccine given out to people in the UK. But he's also had quite a difficult time on his broadcast rounds today talking about the government's plan for the borders and in particular quarantine hotels. This has been in discussion for weeks. So why hasn't it already happened? And is there a row going on in government? Has someone made a mess of things?
So I think what is so interesting about this delay is there was a debate in government about who should have to do it, with Priti Patel and Matt Hancock basically the view that anyone returning to the country should have to quarantine in a hotel. Boris Johnson wasn't so keen on that idea, so it's ended up with only people who are coming from or have been in a red list series of countries where there's particular worries about new variants. But what is odd, and it's one of those things that when you talk to people in government, no one can quite give you a kind of coherent explanation of, is why there has been such a delay in doing this, given that we know that most of these hotels that would be used, these airport hotels, are standing pretty empty for the obvious reason that the number of people travelling is dramatically down on where it is normally. And I think this will be a tension, because if you look at this, there at the moment, there is a sense that, countries that are making progress on vaccination are particularly keen to try and have a tough border policy to try and protect themselves from new variants. Israel had initially said that people who had been vaccinated wouldn't need to quarantine when they'd been abroad and returned to the country on the belief that they would be safe from that. The Israelis look like they're about to rescind that because they are so worried about a vaccine-evading variant coming into the country from somewhere else. So I think the government will continue to come under pressure on this point. This is also something where Keir Starmer has not done that much opposition politics during this pandemic, but one place where both him and Nigel Farage are happy to attack the government is on why aren't the rules at the borders stricter.
Katie, you've got a fascinating piece in this week's magazine on how the vaccination programme rolled out. And understandably, there are a lot of people who are very keen to take credit for its success so far. Do you think on borders there'll be the opposite effect, with lots of ministers trying to say, it's this department's responsibility?
Yes, I think we're seeing that. The constant shifting of who's going to give what statement. Is it Matt Hancock? Is it Priti Patel? You don't get the sense, as perhaps you're seeing with vaccines departments, very keen to say this is more my responsibility than yours. In fact, it could be the opposite. And I think it's interesting because clearly Labour are going quite hard on the idea of having quarantine hotel for all arrivals rather than just these areas. But I think the lack of details and the lack of pace, we are getting close to 2 weeks since that policy was announced. I think that if you are going to announce a policy which is apparent to stop what the government are calling as, you know, dangerous new strains from entering the country, is getting pretty lax if you don't think they're so... they're being perhaps not completely honest in how dangerous they think they are if that nothing happens within a fortnight.
Just moving on to another issue that's been rumbling on for a long time and that people seem to be quite keen also not to take responsibility for is the looming threat of Scottish independence, James. Luke Graham has stepped down as Boris Johnson's advisor on Scottish independence. Is this a significant resignation?
I don't think it is that significant, but I think it raises a question about tactics and also how Downing Street kind of relates to the Scottish Tory party. Luke Graham is a former Tory MP for a Scottish seat, lost in the election, then came down to work in Downing Street on this union unit. Now, I think the interesting question is, there are two phases of this fight for the union. One is the question of, can you stop the SNP from getting an overall majority at Holyrood? Right now, that looks unlikely. Then the second question is, what do you do if they succeed in doing that? And I think the ways in which Downing Street's, in which Boris Johnson's thinking on this has evolved is he used to be of the view that you just say no, that you can't lose a referendum that you don't allow to happen. And I think he will carry on saying no. But I think what there is a recognition that they need to say no because. Now, the first because is obvious. The first because is COVID. At a moment when the country is, in all parts of the UK, is trying to recover from COVID, now is not the time to distract government machines and politicians and society, frankly, with a divisive referendum. The second, but that argument is obviously going to become, to carry, hold less weight the more time that elapses. And so what is your second not because argument? And I think that is the big thing that they need to work out what that should be. You know, there are a lot of influential people who think it should be some broader look at the constitution across the whole of the UK to basically say Brexit, COVID have highlighted that there are ways in which the UK is governed that need to change. And you know, this isn't going to be, here are some more powers for Holyrood, now please stop talking about independence. This would be a big look at how the UK is governed. I think that is one option. But I think that, you know, but Downing Street needs to work out what their fallback option is in the highly likely event that A, the SNP win a majority, B, these rows in the SNP don't lead to the party imploding, and C, that, you know, they are still asking for an independence referendum in 2023, 2024.
Katie, you write a lot about how Scottish Conservatives are feeling about the Holyrood elections and about the way the government is handling the threat of Scottish independence more generally. How are they feeling at the moment?
I think they're feeling a little bit more optimistic. I think you have to get where the level that they are coming from. So this was a low place to start. But I do think a few events recently mean that when you speak to Scottish Conservative MPs, but also Tories in Scotland, in Holyrood, actually, they are beginning to see a few reasons to believe that the SNP could be in trouble, and also that their job in terms of promoting the union could be getting easier. And I think, as one put it to me, you know, the SNP are not like a normal party. One dent might be able to knock down another party or hurt a leader, but the SNP, it takes several. And that's partly because they have endured for so long. And if you look at their poll ratings, I think a lot of politicians in Westminster often feel that defies what they think is their domestic record. But they think there's enough problems coming off the track that one of them must do it. So if you look at Joanne Sherry going, the infighting in the party, the disagreements over independence, and also the salmon inquiry. But then I think the reason actually, probably in the longer term, is one of the really big problems I think that Tory politicians in Westminster have had when they've been working out their plan for the union is the sense that on COVID, regardless of the data, which actually shows Scotland and England have both had very undesirable outcomes in terms of deaths, Nicola Sturgeon is seen to have handled it much better. It comes up a lot in the focus groups. And therefore, with the vaccination programme, you're beginning to see something where they can say, look, this is a UK-wide project and it's being handled well. I think a few of them are perhaps not crying over the fact it's a bit slower in Scotland. But generally, I think the main push is not so much that Scotland are behind, but you can say this is something that perhaps an independent Scotland would have struggled to do, and therefore it's a positive argument to make.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.